Hello, thank you very much for joining us for episode 11 of the Gestalten podcast. My name is Eric Galina, and I'm joined by my colleague,
Martin Groschwald. Hello, Eric. How are things?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, enjoying a spring-like February here in London, which is atypical, but very welcome. But how are things over in Munich?
It's getting much better now. We have the big winter time is over. It's really getting into spring, and it's getting much busier. To be very, very honest. So it seems like, you know, everything is running up now towards Geneva, and I'm pretty sure that we will see a few very big surprises once Geneva is happening, but more to that obviously later. But apart from that, yeah, Munich is great. We're looking forward to the sun and and having a good time at the river and at the English Garden, just to kind of relax after work in the next few weeks. But before that, obviously, there's a little bit of work to do.
Yes, and we've been quite busy actually. With the concept house activities going on, we've really been stepping it up with a lot of things, and there's going to be a big announcement coming up as well in terms of a new area of activity that we are going to be really pushing in the coming months. But more on that later. Now, let's just kind of delve into what it is that we have seen and what it is that we're looking forward to in the very near future. So I guess the first thing, you know, where do you want to kick off? I mean, should we talk about what's going on in the industry at the moment?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do that. And I think from that kind of perspective, we haven't really done this in about like, you know, 2 or 3 months or something like that.
Detroit, but I think, was the last one.
Last one, exactly. So Detroit was the last one. We've actually been looking into some cars that came out after Detroit Motor Show and now before Geneva. We're not going to take anything away from Geneva. We're going to do a special podcast at the show as always. But we were really struggling to find any cars of relevance that were coming out in those last 6 weeks or whatever it was. But what we can talk about, which I think was very, very interesting, is the recent moves of a number of designers that have been announced online or like in the media and stuff like that. And some of them were actually quite big and some of them were what we thought was a little bit delayed. And I think we can start with this one, which was Stéphane Jeannin, who was announced to go over to Infiniti from Renault on an exchange program, because obviously they are part of the same alliance. And we were a little bit surprised when this was announced, because he's been there for a little bit longer than the announcement came through.
Yeah, it always takes a bit of time, it would appear, before these announcements happen. Obviously, we knew about Stéphane's move. I heard about this, I think, back in the Paris show, where, he was anticipated to be going over there and joining Karim Habib's team in Japan. And so this is a great move for him. Obviously he's done great work. And it's always interesting when I hear about these moves, because, I'm thinking, like, who has the most to gain? Because obviously, from a Stéphane Jeannin perspective, yes, living in Japan, working with Karim over on Infiniti is great for him. If I put myself in his place, I would be really quite happy to make that move with my family over to Japan and to work on such progressive vehicle concepts and such a progressive brand as Infiniti, certainly under Karim Habib, has proven to be. But from Karim's perspective also, let's see, Mr. Karim Habib, who's been with Infiniti now a little over a year, he has in Stéphane an amazing, guy that can really lead direction for concept vehicles.
This guy is a home run. Yeah. I mean, I think if you would ask anybody on the top level management, if they, if they would be capable of or able to get Stéphane Jeannin on their team, they would sign the papers right away. Yeah. And it is obviously a sign also for Karim, but also it's a sign of strength, I think, for the alliance in total. to allow such a move to happen. Because let's be very honest, Stefan Janin was the brain behind almost every concept car over the past few years at Renault, and he led obviously the team. And this whole thing culminated with the Trésor, which I think was his masterpiece over the past few years. And, you know, having such a guy coming over to Infinity, to Japan, to Nissan, and share this creativity with the guys over in Japan is an absolute home run for not only Karim Habib, but of course also for Alfonso Albaiza, that this is happening. Of course, you know, I think it hurts a little bit to the guys over at Renault, but there's, you know, enough talent there to kind of, you know, make sure that the gap is not going to be too big. There will be a small gap, of course, because he's almost irreplaceable on that kind of level. But for and obviously, you know, that for Infinity now, I mean, just from my perspective, the bar is going on to a completely, you know, different level now. Because if I know that, you know, concept cars are coming out and Stefan Janin is involved in this, this better be good, you know. You know, he obviously has the reputation and is, you know, it's absolutely excellent. But I want to see now what he can also do with Karim together at you know, at Infinity, you know. And I think this combination with also someone such as Matt Weaver from the London studio, who has obviously, you know, a really good connection to the guys over in Japan as well, is going to be incredible. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm pretty sure we will see the first thing from that side in Tokyo this year. Maybe even Frankfurt. I would expect Tokyo to be a little bit more realistic as a kind of a coming out party for that, but that's gonna, or maybe LA, yeah, because Infinity is more of an American brand. Well, it's, you know, positioned more of an American brand, but definitely home run, and really, really excited to see where this is going, because the combination of Karim and Stefan is it's almost one of a kind at the moment, I would say, in terms of just the sheer creativity and quality of execution.
Most certainly. I mean, that's that's a really exciting brand right now, Infinity. You know, we've seen a lot of concepts unveiled in recent times, you know, over the last several years. I mean, and really there's a lot of innovation going on at that company, a lot of creativity, certainly within the design organizations that are working on those products. And yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to what it is that they're going to come out with in production form, you know, which we've been teased with a few things, but certainly there is a lot of promise within that brand, judging by the design team, judging by the concepts that we've seen in recent times. So yes, very much one to watch. Very much.
Now, arguably, probably the biggest move, you know, from just the kind of sheer perspective of organization, is of course Wayne Burgess going over to Geely at this moment in time. So he left his position at Jaguar, where he was in charge of all the production vehicles, as far as I'm informed, and has now the full reins of the new Geely studio in the UK. And, you know, not really a big surprise, because, you know, from what we know, he knows Peter Horbury quite well. And Peter is well known, you know, to pick people that he knows how to work, to make sure that Geely is working as a coherent kind of design language as well, which, you know, arguably has worked for him very, very well with that strategy. So I think Wayne fits perfectly in this kind of direction that Geely is moving into at the moment, also in terms of diversity. And I think for him, another big, you know, really big step, and also I think, you know, a really big challenge, because, you know, we had the chance to visit the studio, and you obviously had a conversation with Wayne in particular and in detail about this, but I certainly believe that this is, you know, a very, very big challenge for him, especially with the amount of brands that they're going to be working with. And from what I've heard from you, is he seemed very, very much up for it.
Oh, yes. I mean, Wayne is a talented guy, you know. I mean, when I spoke to Wayne for my, you know, my Form Trends interview, I did something, which I was, I mean... I like to cover things from a designer perspective. So, you know, when I spoke with him, you know, we really went over his career, and this is one of the few kind of British brands, if you take Lotus, which is now owned by Geely, that he hasn't worked for over his over his rather long career. Now, this is a guy that's been with JLR, and you know, minus a short stint at Aston for a little while, for 20 years. You know, it's you know, he really has been brought up in the entire kind of British car industry system. Now, like I said, you know, he did a short stint over there at Aston Martin, but he was also working on with Ian Callum at that time. So, you know, he had a great role at Jaguar. He'll tell you that himself. But at the same time, you know, when you get to a certain age, you realize that, you know, are you going to want to keep doing this? And so, anyway, I invite you to read the interview that I did over there with Wayne on Form Trends. But I think from a career perspective, it was certainly something that was great for him. He'd been speaking. He's on good terms with Peter Horbury. They don't live very far from one another. They routinely have beers together along with Ian Callum as well. But this opportunity obviously came about with his link with Peter Horbury, and you know, the fact that Geely was opening a studio here. And obviously, you know, this is the opportunity of a lifetime, really. When you look at the sheer number of brands that are within this studio, you know, that they're going to be working on. And it's basically like a consultancy, like a carrozzeria back in the 60s, like an Ital Design or a Pininfarina, because they have so many different brands under the Geely Group umbrella that as a designer, this is an amazing opportunity, you know, because... Well, one day you could be working on a Lotus project. The next day you could be working on a Terrafuglia flying car VTOL project. You could be working on Lincoln Co., LEVC. And that was, you know, from a people side, something that really appealed to me as well, because LEVC is the London Electric Vehicle Company, but it was rebranded. Formerly, it was the LTI, which is London Taxi International. And that is pretty much where Wayne started off his career, was working for LTI and designing bits on the London taxi at the beginning of his career. So this is really coming full circle, and him being back in that kind of same premises where LTI was and where he started his career all those years ago. But yeah, it's an amazing opportunity, and I think that he will do very, very well. He's surrounded by some very good people. They're building an excellent team over there. And yeah, it's an amazing, amazing thing for the UK as well in general, that Geely saw fit to actually open up a studio here, because, you know, it's not the only studio that Geely has, right?
There's a bunch of them by now. And I think, you know, it's also good timing, you know, because we just don't know at the moment what happens to Jaguar. Of course, they had a few bumps. They had to lay off a number of people of their entire staff. So it really comes down to, you know, the opportunity and the time. And I think for him, that was absolutely perfect. Yeah, in that regard. So we do wish him all the best, of course.
Absolutely.
And you know, maybe we will see a Design Works proper setup coming out of this. This would be, I think it would also be very, very good for the British industry for multiple reasons to have something like that. We definitely keep our fingers crossed with everything that's going on at the moment that these guys will be as successful as we're all think they will be, with the talent that is there. And
absolutely. And like you mentioned rightly, you know, the JLR situation, you know, unfortunately, you know, in our line of work, there's a lot of people that come and they ask, hey, you know, what's happening with Brexit? What's happening with, you know, Nissan stopping manufacturing? And the design industry here in the UK is still alive and good. for now. And I, you know, especially when you look at a manufacturer like Nissan, for example, they have outposts in various places where they don't necessarily produce cars. So from a car production perspective, and certainly JLR is taking a hit in that regard because everything for JLR is here. They don't have another place where they can build vehicles. So, you know, if this, you know, Brexit situation continues to worsen, and, you know, there is a no deal Brexit, which some people are fearing might happen. I don't want to turn this into a political conversation, but it is a reality that we're facing at the moment, which is, you know, there is a lot of uncertainty, and the people that are manufacturing cars but also have the option of manufacturing them elsewhere and therefore saving themselves a considerable headache and considerable cost if we were to go through a no-deal Brexit and therefore really bring up the costs of producing vehicles in this country, are taking that route. You know, they're looking elsewhere. So Honda, Nissan, you know, they are just kind of hedging their bets because no one knows what's going to happen. And JLR as well. I mean, they haven't been so profitable in recent times. They have a lot of people working for them, and they've got to really brace for what could potentially be a very, very bad situation for them. So, I mean, I'm really hoping for the best. But in the meanwhile, you know, there are a lot of people in JLR that are facing some very uncertain times as well. So it's not a good thing.
Very, you know, obviously very, very unfortunate, that whole situation. But I'm giving a shout out to our listeners here, because I think if you really want us to talk about Brexit and the automotive industry, you know, and how such a political event can or could affect, you know, either side. So, you know, we're talking about the UK, but we're also talking about the European Union. We're talking about America. We're talking about China. Do let us know, yeah, because we internally talk about this obviously a lot due to various kind of situations. And obviously, Eric is in London. My personal situation, you know, goes back directly to the UK as well. So we have personal investment in that. And so if you are interested in us having a special podcast, you know, obviously what does such thing mean on the design side of the industry and obviously on the greater picture as well, do let us know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In those kind of regards, but excuse me, let's go back to the brighter side of everything. We have a couple of more. One of them, I believe, we're just going to we leave that for last, I think, is breaking news. I think nobody else has talked about this before. But first of all, let's talk about Oliver Sampson, who went from the Mercedes-Benz Advanced Studio in California to become NIO's exterior design director. I think that's the position.
Exactly, yeah.
And he will officially succeeding Juho Su, who took over the same position pretty much in the China studio for NIO. Yeah, so he will be very much in charge of the production level and everything that happens in China with NIO. And, you know, let's say for some people in the industry who knew a little bit about this move, not the biggest kind of surprise, but a good one for NIO. I think it's one of their, you know, first signature hires since they've come into existence a few years ago, where you can say this one is maybe not a big of a name as, like, you know, Wayne Burgess or something like that. But, you know, for them to get someone who's very, very accomplished, who has done a lot of good work at Mercedes, is obviously a statement for them and their development over the past few years, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that, you know, within the design community, Oliver Sampson is obviously very well known. He's a very nice guy, and he's done some very cool stuff during his stint over in California these last few years. But I don't think, you know, he's as big a name, perhaps, as some others. You know, Chris Tomlinson, for example, who is his boss, VP of design over there at NIO, has done some amazing stuff at BMW before he was kind of brought in to NIO as well. So, just like Oliver, Chris kind of flew under the radar. No one really knew of his involvement and to what extent He did do things over there at BMW, and now he's doing a pretty good job over at NIO, I would say. Now, you know, in terms of Oliver, you know, I saw him when I was in Forsheim for the degree show recently. He's a great guy. He's, you know, looking again, you know, in terms of opportunity, and NIO is a good opportunity for him. He was really enjoying his time in California, but again, you know, as a satellite studio, typically there's always a rotation that goes in and out of those satellite studios, especially for foreign nationals. They come out and they'll do a stint for, you know, a few years, 3 years, and then that stint kind of comes to an end and they've got to come home. And that's a hard pill to swallow when you've been living, you know, Oliver's lifestyle over in California. So, you know, in terms of coming back to essentially the same role that he'd left 3 years ago over at Mercedes, it was kind of I think it made obvious sense to, you know, if he was going to come back anyway, to look for a place where he could further his career, which is exactly what's happened. So now he is, you know, design director over there at NIO. And, you know, he mentioned how good a boss Chris is, and I don't doubt that for a second. Yeah. So, you know, that is a big selling point. I mean, at the end of the day, the environments, the studios in which you work, you know, as a designer, and, you know, people listening to this podcast know as good as anyone that the amount of time you spend at work outweighs the amount of time you spend with your family. And so you better, you know, be on good terms with these people. You better get on well with them, because if you don't, you know, it's not going to be a good or pleasant experience for you. And so, you know, it's really important. And that's what we do at Concept House as well, is we work to really find people that are going to get on with one another. And, you know, that is vital. That is really just, the fundamental of a design studio and an organization in general. Forget about, you know, a specific design studio, just any company. It's really important to have, people that you can, speak with. You know, have a laugh with and get things done with. So, anyway, I think that's a great move for him, and a great, for NIO as well, as a company, a great designer to have on board.
Yeah. No, like, you know, we're obviously very interested to see the first kind of products or the first concepts that come out of his kind of direction now that he's in Munich. So, good luck to him, and obviously a very, very enjoyable team to work with as well. Now, let's come to this breaking news thing. And we were discussing this actually a little bit earlier today, because we found it a little bit strange that this has not made the rounds in that sense yet. So I have to say, I heard about this before, but, like, you know, the thing that made it official for me was when I checked this person's LinkedIn. You know, just very, very recently. And we're talking about Anders Warming, who obviously very, very famously went from Mini to run the Borgward design, not just department, but he was a board member and everything as well.
He was.
But we found that on his LinkedIn, he stated that his job ended in December 2018. So there's obviously a lot of speculation on why this happened, or, you know, if a contract just ran out or whatever is going on. But this comes as a very, very big surprise. And I don't really want to go into too much speculation about this at the moment, because I'm pretty sure, you know, sooner or later, there will be, you know, a big comment about this as well. But genuinely speaking, you know, we were obviously surprised that this hasn't made the rounds yet. And on the other hand, of course, that his stint at Borgward was only very, very short, from what we can see.
Yes. You know, not only that, but it's, I mean, again, like you say, you know, I don't know what happened over there. I don't know the situation. I'm not internal in Borgward, or indeed, I haven't even contacted Anders to see what has happened. And, you know, so I don't generally like to speculate on things, but for someone that was a VP of design, indeed a board member, to all of a sudden no longer be associated with the company, there's some red flags. So I don't know what happened. I don't know on whose side that happened. I do know that, you know, Borgward is has recently come under new ownership as well. They have a new kind of investment round where, you know, there's other people kind of in there and calling the shots. So perhaps that has something to do with it. But it's interesting, to say the least. But again, you know, it's not very newsworthy at the moment, I think, which is why people haven't covered it, is because no one knows what's going to, well, what, you know, Mr. Warming's next step is. So until we know that, you know, we can't really comment on it. I mean, Borgward seemed like a good deal to me. It was always kind of like, I don't know. I mean, you know, I the mini job really seemed like a very good place to be, you know, from a career perspective. Certainly there was a lot of opportunity there, I thought. But you know, I wasn't inside the company, so I don't know. But Borgward seemed like it was, really a good opportunity for sure, for different reasons. You know, obviously going in and starting up a once glamorous brand or and from scratch, really, you know, having to come in and build something up is challenging, but also extremely rewarding. So I can see, and you know, Anders is a very ambitious person, so I can see the reasoning behind him taking that role to begin with. But as far as what happened, you know, we only he and the company knows. So that's where that is.
Yeah, well, I think for us it's like it's worthy to talk about it in a sense. It's actually quite a big move, and it came a little bit unexpectedly from that side. But at the same time, you know, I'm pretty sure. I mean, Anders is such a talented guy. You know, he will find something if he hasn't even found something yet. Or, you know, if he has actually found something yet, in a very, very short amount of time. So. Let's not worry about him for too much. I mean, he's so talented that he's going to pick something up very, very quickly.
Yes, I'm sure if you wanted to, he could get something, you know, fairly easily in any number of studios. So we'll see what happens. It is interesting to see these companies kind of, you know, there's a lot of companies that seem to be coming up and, you know, they're doing things and then they're not doing things. And, you know, there was another bit in the news recently, which was, Pratap Bose being promoted, which isn't really newsworthy. You know, I think he should have gotten, that role anyway. He is leading the role. So it's just another piece of paper, but, his, junior, which was a guy, leading exterior design. He was chief exterior designer, and he certainly was very present at last year's Geneva show unveiling, is a designer named Matthew Swan, who went over to head Great Wall, or indeed the Haval brand, where at one point, Mr. Pierre Leclerc, now head of Citroën, was the VP of design. So that is an interesting move that no one's actually spoken about. But I guess from, you know, Tata to becoming or chief designer to becoming head of exterior, perhaps that's a big enough step to make one want to move to Baoding. But I don't know. We'd have to talk.
Well, you know, it's more about, I think, the reason why people haven't talked about it that much, or actually very, very little. Also has with the significance of Great Wall. I think in terms of the pure sales numbers of that company, you know, it should have definitely been a big topic. But in terms of, especially in the industry, in terms of the reputation of the company, you know, because of various factors in the background. And I think I've mentioned this before, I always, out of pure banter, wanted to make a t-shirt saying just like, you know, I was approached by Great Wall Motors, where I just believe, you know, it's, there are certain kind of image problems with a move like that, which have to do with some, you know, like this kind of background information that we just mentioned. But generally speaking, you know, it remains to be seen. I mean, you know, Pierre Leclerc did a fantastic job over there with Haval. And, you know, if Matthew and Phil Simmons can keep it up with that kind of work, then of course it will definitely be noteworthy again. But until then, you know, they will have to deliver. I think that's the big difference in that kind of regards, because, you know, Great Wall over here in Europe is not very, very big. And the reputation is not that great. So, you know, I think a lot of people kind of didn't really want to report about it, but, you know, it's still worth mentioning, of course. And, you know, we will see what those guys can deliver. And I'm pretty sure that we will see something very, very soon at the Shanghai Motor Show.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I fully expect Shanghai to be quite an interesting event, certainly. I mean, it's you know, China's always really interesting because of the sheer fact that it is the biggest car market in the world, but also because of the way that people operate over there. I mean, everything is done extremely, extremely quickly. They're adapting, they're running. They're not learning to you know, crawl. They're just kind of learning to walk rather, but they're going from the crawling stage to the get up and run stage. So it's really quite a fascinating country and space, certainly in the automotive sector. But there's a lot of things that are not, you know, up to kind of European standard as well. So There's pros and cons for everything in life, and I think, you know, there are certain things that need to be weighed, you know, certain a benefit kind of analysis that needs to take place within these companies, because, like I said earlier, I mean, there's companies that are sprouting up and then going down, and, you know, up and down and up and down, and it's just it's nowhere is that more obvious than in China, where we've seen the, you know, some very, very big brands really bring on some excellent talent from just purely from a design perspective now. Bring in some very, very good designers, build up quite a reputation for themselves, only then to kind of, you know, cast that reputation aside. Now, rebuilding a tarnished reputation certainly is way, way more difficult than building something from scratch, I would imagine. And that is really, really difficult when, you know, you take a fall, you know. You have been there and you have done that, but for some reason they weren't able to maintain that level throughout. And, you know, perhaps, I mean, you know, cost obviously comes into, you know, chain of command, the board, perhaps, you know, the people, you know, sitting in those loftier positions that are calling the shots above you, all of those factors come into play clearly. But yeah, we will see. But it's certainly very, very entertaining space, China market. Yeah,
yeah, indeed, it indeed is. And you know, we've been talking about it before. We will talk about it again in the future. Absolute latest when we're back in Shanghai for the show. So we will keep it coming. We will keep it more coming. But let's talk about something a little bit more. But we, you know, a little bit something different, because. Excuse me, because we've been criticizing the universities a little bit, I think, you know, and we were always hoping that they're going to be pushing a little bit further, and, like, you know, maybe we were sometimes a little bit too harsh, but at the same time, this is very much our opportunity, you know, our opportunity to speak out a little bit as well. But at the same time, we have now had the chance in the past, I would say, was it 3 months almost, to see three shows. Actually, I was only present at one, so I can only talk in that kind of direction. But we've been to Detroit during the Detroit Auto Show and went to see the CCS presentation over there. You have been to the Pforzheim winter presentation as well, the winter graduation as well. And you've also been to the newly... Was it like a newly started or kind of just a rebranded RCA RCA show for in February now as well? So, how from my interesting perspective, if we look into all of this now and all these shows, you know, and all the universities are trying to keep up with the demand and obviously with the kind of, you know, where the industry is heading at the moment, have things changed? Do you think things have changed and there's a stronger understanding of where the entire, you know, society is going at the moment? Or what was your observation about all these shows in general? And then we can obviously dive in a bit more detail.
Well, yes. So to answer your question, yes and no. let's take these in kind of in succession, because like you say, you were with us, we were together when we went to the CCS show in January, and you yes. made a comment, which was right, about the fact that there was a severe lack in interiors. There was only one interior, I think, on show at that entire degree show. Yep. And it wasn't even a degree show. It was the best work assembled, because that's how they do it. They don't just do a graduate's degree show. So all these guys that were graduates actually had graduated back in December 2018. They were just showing at this show because they were one of the selected and invited few to showcase their final projects there. The others were, so there was, I don't even know, but like a handful, maybe six or eight projects from the graduates. I want to say six because there weren't that many. The rest were students that were currently enrolled in the program. And like you mentioned, there was only one interior. Now that to me is unacceptable, given what we know that's happening in the industry right now. You know, to have one interior project, there should be more guidance on that level, because there's a hell of a lot of interior opportunities going right now. There's very few exterior opportunities, and I find a lot more interior opportunities and a lot, therefore, of interior designers in demand. That and color and materials, I mean, if we just talk about one thing, and that is two words, experience design or user experience. That is really just down to people enjoying a space. And it can, of course, be attributed to the exterior. Most likely, it is your time spent within the cabin and what it is that you witness as a user, how you interact with that vehicle, that space, colors, materials, of course. But, you know, UI, you know, and all of the rest. And so interior is playing a massive part in this whole user experience push, which is really how their, you know, manufacturers are now restructuring in order to cater to that growing area. And everyone is really trying to chase that user experience. Because when you look at shared mobility, for example, what does it come down to? How do you differentiate a brand? So I think that there was some projects. There were some projects over in CCS that were interesting, but you know, I think as ever, you know, from a university perspective, it seems like the students that really take it upon themselves and take it seriously and really look outside of the traditional four walls of the university and what they're being taught and what it is that they're being asked to do, and actually go an extra step outside and start to explore what the current paradigms are, how those paradigms are changing, and what the future scenario is for motor mm-hmm. vehicle, or indeed vehicle design, because forget about the motor, are the people that are going to win. So from that perspective, I mean, I don't know if you've got anything to add from that CCS show kind of perspective.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, the biggest disappointment, I think, what you mentioned incorrectly, and you know, was really the lack of interiors, because I think it's such a big opportunity for, in particular, the students, I would say, to differentiate, you know, each other, and to really try to kind of develop something new. What I did find a little bit astonishing in the kind of the CCS area, especially compared to the sketch battle. Yeah, one has to kind of say every year There is a Detroit sketch battle, and, you know, students from all over the US and, like, you know, from all over the world actually are competing in this. It's pretty much like a rap battle, but just with sketching. You know, watch 8 Mile or something like that if you really want to figure it out what it actually is. It's very, very similar to that. But there was much more creativity actually in the sketch battle. So I didn't know if it was just because they had, like, you know, the timing that was, you know, that was kind of pushing them or whatever. But when I looked into the sketches and compared them to the actual presentation at the CCS, I felt, you know, I felt much more gratitude in the sketch battle sketches than I did in the CCS sketches. Simply because, you know, there was the creativity in there. People had new ideas. Maybe the topics were better in the sketch battle. Whereas I had a little bit of the feeling that, in particular at maybe the clay models, or, like, you know, the 3D models and stuff like that, there was very, very little original thought in there. I would have loved to see a little bit more about what is really the future of transportation in general, or of mobility. And, you know, there was always something that we've kind of seen already, what wasn't like 100% unique just for that kind of person. It was well executed. So, you know, the craftsmanship behind it, and also the, you know, the creativity behind in that kind of project was good, but it wasn't original. So I had a little bit more of the feeling it came back more to styling, you know, than it came to this kind of completely new idea of what could we do, and what could transportation and mobility be like in the future. But we obviously don't know each and, you know, or every single project scope or project brief that was given for that, of course. But it, you know, I had a little bit of the feeling at CCS it came down to the styling. The sketch battle was, however, then absolutely fantastic. There was some really, really cool stuff in there, and some really talented guys, where I'm saying I would have loved to see a little bit more from that side. But yeah, I mean, you know, how did Thought Time, which was the second, you know, which was the next one in line, compare to what you saw in Detroit?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to say Sketch Battle is awesome. I think it's super cool. It is kind of like, I guess it could be like an 8 Mile thing. It's more like a fight club, you know, where, you know, the guys are pitted against one another. They do this, they do that. And then it just gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And you can feel like you can cut the stress with a knife in there. It's the tension is really what I think makes people create stuff that's like super creative, and, you know, because they don't have time to be thinking about other things. They're just, you know, really under the gun. And because of that, you know, they're sketching faster than they're able to think. And that is amazing. And that's where creativity really comes out. And, you know, those that are, you know, you're uninhibited, you're just like focused on that one thing and get it out. And that is a great, great environment. So I think, you know, a lot of people love the sketch battle, and you know, hats off to Brooke Banham over there in Detroit, who's actually teaching at CCS, funnily enough, but for pulling that off. And you know, because it's a great event, and I think that a lot of people that I've spoken to anyway really enjoy it. And it's a shame that it's only in Detroit, or, you know, it's in other places certainly, but I've only ever been in Detroit. Because that's really when it's around the motor show. But to answer your question, therefore, Forsheim and CCS, I mean, you can tell that it's a different league. I think just because Forsheim is more kind of tapped into what the industry is looking for, certainly at the moment. And it has a lot to do with, I think, the sponsored projects and the people that they're working with. Because they have a lot of projects that are a lot of partners that are coming in and asking. I mean, it's a privilege to go in and work with Forsheim, because you're getting really, really young, creative designers thinking about how to push your brand into the future, or, you know, solutions to. So, for example, you know, I'll just give you one example, which is the Hockenheim race circuit. And you know, they approached Forsheim, and they were like, how can we do something that will, you know, because racing is not involving, you know, it's like it's a spectator sport, right? And now it's not even like that much fun to watch anymore. You know, it's like, you know, it's not like back in the day of like, you know, Jacques Villeneuve or Michael Schumacher, you know, battling, as you know, Alan Prost, like battling it out there on the racetrack. It's like all these cars, it's kind of like, you know, how boring. I mean, the robo race thing, it's mm-hmm. like, you know, an autonomous car driving around. Like, how the hell are you going to get entertainment out of that? So I think it's really interesting that they came to the students and they said, hey, how can we make motor racing more involving for the public and for the spectators? And, you know, they posed that question to some master's students. So over there at Forsheim, they divide it. They've got the master's students in the first year are working on exterior design proposals. On the second year, they are working on interior design proposals. And in this case, it was a car, or a race car rather, that really wanted you to bring the spectators into it. So there was a lot of crossover, and we all know designers prefer doing exteriors anyway. But there was some really cool proposals for how the future of the race car could be, just to make it that much more interesting for the viewers. And so, you know, because of that, they, you know, there was a lot of creativity. You know, people are looking towards how is it that we're going to do this, you know, for the future. And so there was some really, you know, it was left field ideas and some really creative stuff. And, you know, I'll be publishing a lot on Form Trends in due course here, because I've been quite busy. But I've got a shed load of videos, which is really just the way to digest these types of creations. You know, in general, as an overview, I would say that Forsheim has an incredible luxury in that it's a free university. Basically, you know, they open their doors up to everyone. They have an incredible number of applicants every year, and only a very, very small, a very few spots for these guys. So they can be incredibly selective, which they are. And once you get in, it's not like it's the end. You know, I mean, basically you have three tries to get in. And I was speaking to a junior designer that on his third try, he finally got in. He took lessons in between on sketching. And, you know, really they just want to see how good you are at creating ideas, you know, generating a good looking, and that you understand, you know, design and proportions before they even get you into the program, before they even teach you anything. You need to have like an incredible kind of portfolio going into that school. So what might be suitable for another university's master program isn't even enough to gain bachelor entry into Forsheim. So that in itself is like already you're dealing with a different kind of breed of person, right? Because these are guys that are like so hungry and so good that it's like, throwing them a project is from a manufacturer's perspective, quite an honor, because you're sure you're going to get some incredible results. So students at Forsheim definitely get a leg up because people are falling over themselves trying to get them. I mean, for example, just now, like a couple of BA grads already had job offers. I mean, they were just at the show showing off some projects. It's not even like they had offers. I mean, some people had offers, yes, but there was people that they were like employed before they even did their final thesis project. Before, you know, so the company that employed them said, hey, we'll just we'll support you, and you can, you know, we'll build your model. But at the end, you're coming to work for us. So it was kind of like their education kind of ended months ago, right? I mean, they were just like already they had like, of course, they worked very hard to get this final project and present it and so on. But they already had a job. They already had somebody that was going to build their model for them, which in a lot of cases at Forsheim, because it is sponsored by some of these manufacturers, you know, their full-size models are built, or their 1-4, you know, models, and or 1-5. And so that is like a really interesting kind of thing, that's happening at Forsheim. But again, if you look at the curriculum over at Forsheim, I mean, they're learning, not only are they learning like sketch techniques, but they're also learning etiquette, and they're also learning how to like, you know, sell yourself in a job interview, how to speak to people who come to look at your work, how to, create an animation. I mean, you know, they're learning 3D, they're learning Alias, they're learning VRED, they're learning, it's incredible. And they have like so much that is at their disposal at that school. And they are really just learning from the best, and therefore they are really putting out the best at that university. And so it's really great to see that.
Yeah, yeah.
Some projects were better than others, of course. It's always going to be the case. But I think in terms of the most recent show that I saw was kind of the one that I wasn't expecting and the one that blew me away the most. And also made me ask quite a lot of, questions internally, because it was the RCA Intelligent Mobility Degree Show. Now, you mentioned this as well.
Yeah. Before we get to that, I have a question about Pforzheim. So, I've been, and I don't want to be devil's advocate over here or something like that, but from all the pictures that I've seen, from some of the reports that I've read and stuff like that, it still seems to me that they're fundamentally exterior based. Yeah. Do you think that, this is maybe more because the university pushes them to go into that direction, or maybe that, the industry pushes the people in Pforzheim going more into that direction because, they have a very immediate, competitor now close to them, which is the Reutlingen University, which has a fundamentally interior and color and trim course that you can attend both on, I think, bachelor's and a master's program. But it didn't really seem have much big of an effect on Pforzheim to kind of adapt a little bit towards the interior side as well. Was that the same case for, for this show as well? And if so, how would you explain that? Is it just the sheer quality of exterior that they are known for that, they want to keep up and get their people into the jobs?
From a graduate project perspective, I don't think the students are being pushed in any one direction. I think there's always been a propensity for designers to really seek out exteriors, less so than there's been for people that are looking for creating interior designs. That said, I did see quite a lot of interiors and certain like holistic vehicle concepts as well at Pforzheim. And some of which were really, really good, but I don't think the university is certainly not pushing students in one way or another. Like I said, on the first year master's, students are having to do an exterior, and then the interior is what follows in the second year. So you have to do both. Mm-hmm. That is certainly on the master's level, they are showing you. Or rather pushing you in the exterior direction in the first year, and then you have to show them that you also understand and how to do an interior on the second year. And so I think that's good because, they're maybe pushing students out of their comfort zone. People are more interested in doing exteriors, but they have to do an interior project if they are going to be graduating from that school. And, in that regard, it helps them to kind of look at things differently. And that is always useful when you're in a creative space to kind of, look at something from a different perspective, and certainly one that you're not generally interested in doing, or, that you've never really thought about before, can certainly push the creative envelope. And, because then you come at it from a completely different perspective. So I don't think that the university is necessarily pushing people in any one direction. I just think that at the end of the day, when they're in university, you kind of tend to choose which you prefer working on. So that, ultimately is just down to a feeling.
Yeah.
And what it is that you you feel you're most better suited for, and mm-hmm. what you enjoy doing the most. And so, yeah, there was a lot of exterior projects, but there were also some interior projects, which, maybe in what you've read, you didn't actually see a lot of the things that were on show. But I think Pforzheim, and to kind of go to your last kind of comment as well, is Reutlingen, yeah, it's a good program. It's it's right there down the road. Last summer we hit off both because they were happening at the same time. Went to one degree show, went to another degree show, and the program has been running for a while. It's not it's not brand new. And yes, they are putting out some clever interior designers, some of which were actually studying on a master's level over there at Forsheim. So, there were students from Coventry, there were students from all sorts of other universities that eventually came over to Forsheim because to do their master's, because they just realized how incredibly valuable it is to get a degree from that program. And it's really, really hard to do that. Certainly to get in, even forget about like whether or not you can stick it out. It's just even the entry, getting into that school is extremely, extremely competitive. And that's why. But I don't think, I think there are some great projects that are coming out of Reutlingen as well. It's a good school, but it's, from a vehicle design, perspective,
it's not on the same level.
No, it's really tough to beat Forsheim.
Yeah, but that's okay. I mean, Forsheim has a lot of history with that as well. Reutlingen is relatively new in that sense.
Yes.
But when we speak about history, let's talk about the Royal College of Art, because I think just because of the name and the tradition that comes with that, it's probably, probably the most famous art school in the world. Maybe Art Center would disagree, but let's put it that way. So they have changed their course from transportation design to mobility intelligence, mobility intelligent design. So we were actually quite excited about this because we think it's going definitely into the right direction. But what I would want to know from you, has it actually changed or is it just a name change?
Oh, no. This is a fundamental change, like a hardcore shift in direction. Obviously vehicle design before, I started to get a little bit bored. I've been covering the RCA since, for like 14 years, pretty much. I think, I've been going to the RCA vehicle design degree show every year for 14 years. And I've watched it kind of progress. And in the beginning, there was like 8 students, and it was really easy and manageable. And there was some really, really cool conceptual stuff. It was always mostly centered around vehicles or like, it is vehicles, but it was mostly centered around cars and the car space. But there were sometimes some really cool stuff, from a yacht perspective or a motorcycle perspective or, something that was not a four-wheeled car. And I always really enjoyed those projects. But, after a while, and I think, I don't know what really happened, there was, it shifted from this kind of conceptual, like blue sky thinking, anything is possible type, I'll create this flying car, or these two motorbikes that link together in a whole Mercedes branded experience, to, just kind of more like, running through the cycle type thing, more of the same, running the, churning out some cars and and then let's ship it to China and get it built type thing. And I think it lost its creative, and that to me was always the big advantage, was that, they didn't force you to create something with four wheels. They, it was something that was incredibly conceptual where, if you could, explain that it was a vehicle of sorts, that it would work. I mean, I saw some really awesome proposals over the course of my visits there, where like I said, that whole two motorbikes that created a car, so you could have and it was all branded Mercedes as well. So it was like you could have these two Mercedes motorbikes for when you wanted to travel individually by yourself or whatever, and then combine it together to create a car. But it wasn't only that. That in itself is cool as anything. But it wasn't just that. It was like that then also integrated into this Mercedes-Benz ecosystem that he created. It was like this Mercedes-Benz house and then this Mercedes-Benz fashion, and this is before MB style, mind you, this is before we started talking like, Mercedes-Benz washing machine and thing. And like, he thought about all of this and integrated it so well and so brilliantly that it went beyond the scope of just, yeah, this has four wheels and there's a badge on the front, so that's the brand. It was really, really cool. And this year I saw more of that. And yeah, there was some incredible stuff in there where, you know, you think about, and so it isn't just a name change. I mean, intelligent mobility sounds cool. But again, that's the direction that the industry is taking. And, you know, that is, and, you know, the thing is, I'll come back to this in a minute because there's another flip side to this is that, but the projects that I saw on show this year, I mean, they ranged from VTOLs to, you know, vehicles that were specifically designed for the city and, like, you know, where it could shift onto its side and rotating cockpits, to like an entire different experience for, you know, the Land Rover brand. There was a Land Rover sponsored project that had taken place, and they basically weeded it out, you know, down to six and then down to three, and the best three were on show at, last week in at the Degree Show. And these things were incredible. I mean, you know, when you think about what Land Rover means, what it represents, and how to move that brand into the future. You know, what is the future for Land Rover, for Range Rover? And there was some really compelling stuff, you know, really, you know, making people think different in terms of experience. People, you know, thinking in terms of like brands, you know, and, you know, just generally it was, yeah, I mean, in terms of like, again, money well spent, Land Rover sponsoring that was pretty cool because it kind of gave them an incredible amount of ideas, no doubt, in terms of where they could go in this changing world that we're living in. You know, what is the future of a brand that has such a strong reputation? You know, are we creating VTOLs? Are we creating, submarines? Are we doing like, a kind of experience, a holistic kind of vehicle experience type thing, like where it brings the user into a whole different environment that they can. I mean, this is like super cool, creative stuff. And you know, also one of the things that I really liked was they really, so not only did they focus on user experience, they focused on user interface. They focused on shared vehicles. I mean, current problems, you know, current solutions to problems, right? How do you create a shared vehicle when most people don't want to share? You know, they'll tell you they don't want to share, but all these people are coming up with, yeah, you know, we'll partner with, so BMW, Mercedes, very recently, Daimler, BMW, coming out with the fact that they were dropping a sincere amount of cash, a boatload of cash into developing an Uber style system. Clearly, and I read somewhere recently as well that, you know, in the Western world, I think there were like 600,000 rides, or maybe a hell of a lot more than that. Sorry, 600 million rides completed by Uber in the last year. Whereas in China and BD, they did over a billion like rides last year. Yeah. That's like some serious, I mean, no wonder people are looking into these, because that is clearly, you know, the way that, you know, it's going, right? There's no longer ownership. You don't have the headache. You don't have the maintenance issues. You don't have to worry about parking, but yet you still have this experience of traveling in a vehicle, and maybe it's shared, maybe it's not, but either way, you're getting chauffeured around, right?
Yeah.
So, there was some really interesting stuff.
So from my perspective now, you know, when I hear you talking about all of these things, would you even consider the new RCA program as a real competitor to Pforzheim CCS R Center, or do you think it has now moved into a new sphere, which almost stands by itself? Like, I'm not talking about the general kind of sketch quality, but I'm talking about you know, the ideation of transportation. And for transportation, we're talking about boats, you know, we're talking about cars, we're talking about BTOL, planes, any kind of transportation that you can think of. Do you think the RCA has, you know, stepped it up and, like, you know, moved away from these traditional transportation or automotive design courses?
Absolutely, and this is definitely what I was saying before in terms of this, what I wanted to come to, you know, playing devil's advocate. It's that, yes, I think without a doubt the RCA has stepped it up, because they're exploring things that no other university that I've been to is exploring. This is not a course in sketch quality. This is not a course in surface execution, though some cars did showcase, some projects rather did showcase that. There was, you know, some yacht projects as well, but this was more of a thinking exercise, more of a, you know, what is the future? You know, how can we look into and provide, you know, sustainable solutions for some issues that people are currently experiencing and have expressed interest in? So yeah, I think from a conventional art center, you know, show me a car type thing, you know, four wheels and an engine or an electric powertrain or whatever, this is definitely moving the game on. But where I was going to play devil's advocate, it's at that point, you know, when you get a degree from a university like that, it shows that you're pretty good at, like, you know, with a crystal ball, right? Maybe. Mm-hmm. It shows that potentially you'll get a career in strategy. It doesn't show that you can design a, you know, a door mirror coming out of school, right? Which is basically what you need to do when you're, you know. So I don't know. I didn't speak to enough industry people to really get a feel for what their thoughts were on that. I spoke to some people where it was like, yeah, this is really the direction that people need to go. But from a practical perspective, and again, just playing devil's advocate here, you know, how easily applied are these new learned skills into getting a job straight out of school in a car design studio, you know, in a place where you have to work with Alias or, you know, Photoshop, and you've got to drum up some ideas, and you've got to work with 3D modelers and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know, you know, I mean, we'll have to wait and see, you know, I don't know the answer to that question.
Maybe that's exactly where, you know, they differentiate each, you know, from each other. I think, you know, it's also okay if Potsdam develops exactly those kind of guys. You know, I don't want to say there's a lack of, you know, futuristic or strategic thinking there. But it's definitely, and I think Art Center is very close, CCS as well, it's definitely more tailored to what the industry needs in the very, very short-term future. And that for me would be the next 5-10 years.
Yeah.
Whereas it may be that, you know, the RCA takes that step to say, like, look, what our people here are made to be your future thinkers. You know, they're not here to maybe do your next level, you know, BMW 5 Series or something like that. Maybe that's a kind of risk that they are willing to take. And I think, you know, maybe we will see fewer people from the RCA actually going into the traditional car design jobs, but we might see more, you know, RCA people going into, you know, jobs with KPMG or Ernst & Young or something like that, you know, that where you say, like, okay, so those kind of thinkers do work well in a different kind of environment now as well. I think this is where, for me, the interesting part is coming in, is I don't think that we know yet those new positions that arise with a course like that. You know, because it could be in terms of consulting businesses, in terms of strategic, you know, management services and so on and so on, that these guys have the ability, because, you know, they're still artists, like, you know, they went to a college of art today so that they can express themselves very clearly, you know, with the help of graphics or, you know, sketches or whatever. But they're not necessarily go to work for someone like Aston Martin or, you know, Nissan or Mercedes or BMW anymore. You know, maybe that's the direction that we're moving into, is the intelligence actually of understanding the niche market from a higher perspective is more in demand than, or, you know, is in the same demand as the actual, you know, execution.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with you entirely. I think the people that are graduating the RCA now are not necessarily looking for jobs in, you know, traditional automaker studios. Maybe they are, but, you know, I'm sure there will be some space for some really creative visionary thinkers within those studios as well. We're seeing a lot of things happening within design organizations at the moment where there's a complete restructuring, trying to really stay relevant within the industry, you know, within the world, I should say. And some of the big industry players are really having to shift course in order to cater to this demand for different forms of mobility. So I think yes and no. You know, maybe there will be space for, you know, these people within a restructured GM, indeed, as you mentioned, perhaps they're not even interested in going and doing that. Maybe they just want to work for a TFL, you know, create some really cool ways for urban, you know, dwellers to get around in a congested urban environment. You know, perhaps that, you know, there'll be some room for them at Ernst & Young. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting though to see this course. And I think at the end of the day, like I said, I think at the end of the day, this course over, you know, many years has developed this reputation for itself that, you know, these guys can still sketch. These guys obviously have an interest in vehicles, you know, whether that's of the four-wheeled, you know, electric or autonomous variety, you know, I don't know. Perhaps it's of a different type of vehicle, but nonetheless, they still have the capabilities to sketch. They still have the capabilities to, you know, really think about, you know, brands. They still have the capabilities to think about, you know, surface solutions and ways of coming up with a different product. So, I mean, I think there'll be room for them. And because of the reputation of the university and its alumni list as well, you know, it's only going to propel it further forward, I think. But I think it also opens up the notion for them to go in and work for various different companies after this that are really looking to tackle the problem of mobility and looking at coming up with solutions for mobility. So, you know, the Apples, perhaps the Googles, who knows? You know, it might be, you know, they might be getting positions over there once they come out of school. So it's a very interesting time right now in the industry. And I think the RCA's Intelligent Mobility Program is also a fascinating one, just because they are adapting to these changes that are taking place. And, you know, we're not really seeing that, you know, in other universities. And certainly, you know, it seems like they are more churning out people that could get a job in the short term. And maybe that's what universities should be about. Maybe they should be about exploring what it is that we could potentially be doing in 10, 15, 20 years time. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that.
I think nobody really has, because it comes down to academic content. It comes down to, like, you know, the connection between academia and of course the industry. But yeah, it's very interesting to see how this will continue as well, you know, and obviously, let's say, this summer shows, next year's shows, and which kind of direction things are moving into. So there was a very wide gap in terms of, like, you know, what is full-time now, what is CCS now, what is the RCA nowadays with this new kind of direction. So let's finish it off with this one. I don't want you to, you know, to have a kind of, you know, which is the best school, because I think in the end, everybody should apply and go to that school where they feel most comfortable, where they think, you know, it can help their skill, like their interest, in the best possible way. But I want to talk with you about quickly before we leave is, of course, quick announcement. First quick announcement that we're going to do is about Geneva. So we are recording this on the 26th of February. So this will come out very, very shortly, probably on a Friday, Thursday or Friday. Depends on when our lovely producer Eddie is going to upload this and when he's finished editing. We will be in Geneva next week, of course, and we will again do a lovely live podcast and obviously a live streaming event again from the Geneva Motor Show. Mm-hmm. So when you listen to this, do let us know. We will put something on Instagram as well. Do let us know what you want us to talk about in particular on when you see it on the first day of the show, if you see it online, if you see it at the show, whatever. We will be recording and live streaming the podcast on the Wednesday, which is the 6th of March, I think.
Yeah,
the 6th of March, either at 10 or 11 a.m. I think that depends a little bit on, you know, which kind of location we can find and stuff like that. Central, but sometime during that morning. Sorry,
Central
again?
European time, so Geneva time.
Geneva time, which is Central European time for our friends in Asia. So that will be a really, really nice popcorn entertainment for you in the evenings once you come home. For our friends in America, you have to get up. You know, we get up for Super Bowl, so you can get up for our lovely podcast. And
or just stay up late.
Or stay up late, or just, you know, I don't know, get hammered. You know, we don't want to, like, you know, tell you to get drunk or whatever in like that sense. But we will be obviously
UK, consider it's an hour ahead.
Exactly. Yeah. So we will be broadcasting live there. If you have any questions, comments, things you want us to talk about, do let us know. We're very excited about this. Geneva is our favorite show, I would say, because it's
and I love doing
it's quite
shows.
Small.
I love just going up there and talking about the stuff that we saw recently, because I think, you know, then it's always fresh and it's good, and it's always I really like the show reviews, and I hope you guys listening do as well, but that's the feedback that I've gotten as well so far, so quite interesting to hear from you guys always, and yeah, please do continue to let us know. And as Martin said, if you have any suggestions, anything that you'd like for us to cover, by all means, do get in touch, you know, with us somehow in, you know, various different ways that you can do that, you know, and, you know, just by all means, let us know what it is that you would like us to feature. And if you have any comments or suggestions or, yeah, otherwise, we look forward to having you listen in. And yeah, we're really looking forward to being in Geneva because, yeah, like Martin said, it's one of our favorite shows of the year because it is so design-driven, because it is neutral territory, because there are quite a number of manufacturers that are over there, and because it's quite small, so you don't have to walk around that much.
Exactly. It's not like you need a scooter as you do in Frankfurt to get from one hall to another one. So as we are getting older and lazier, Geneva is the perfect show for us. Yeah. And what I also wanted to do is I wanted to introduce you to something new, which will officially be launched on the 1st of March 2019, which will be our new Concept House Academy. So you will be seeing this on social media. You will be seeing this on, you know, on our website and stuff like that very, very soon. And we just wanted to use, you know, the podcast a little to promote it a little bit. We have hired a lovely chap to run the academy. His name is Mark Pasco. Some of you might know him. He's one of the best visualization artists and teachers out in the entire industry. Also very good photographer, I have to say. Mm. And he will be running our Concept House Academy. He will be running all this, you know, the schedules pretty much. He will be in charge of all the trainings and stuff like that. And the idea behind it is to, you know, help you professionals. We're not talking about the juniors in that per se, but we will be out there to help the professionals to learn new tools, you know, to help improve on certain kind of tools, and obviously to help the OEMs in particular to implement new tools for, you know, for kind of their next step into the 21st century. Yeah. So we know of manufacturers nowadays that have to go to do 3D reviews only, no more sketch reviews, only 3D reviews, in Alias Data, Maya Data, whatever you can think of. And so with this academy, we want to give, you know, the opportunity, of course, to jump onto that kind of next level. And, you know, watch out for more information. We will have a lovely little video with Mark as well, where he's introducing himself. And, we're going to have a lot of fun with that. And we will obviously speak to a few people in Geneva about this as well. So if you have any questions about it, if you want to know a little bit more about it, it will come on online very, very shortly, and we will give you a very, very cool overview of everything that's going to happen with it. We are very, very excited. We're very excited to have another new team member on board. We're excited to grow the company. I think what we want to achieve with that is we want to have this kind of ecosystem where we can really provide the best possible service, you know, alongside the headhunting, the consulting, the agency support for the design industry per se, but obviously very specifically also for the transportation design industry. So we're super excited about this, and you will see us wandering around with probably some cool stickers or something like that in the future that have the lovely green neon green logo on there. But we will probably get Mark on board in the future as well to give a little bit of an insight on what he has been doing. He's an absolute VRED expert, what this tool can do for you and stuff. So we're very, very excited about this, and wanted to let you know, our listeners, giving you guys the opportunity to be the first to know about this on when this comes upon release. So we're looking forward to hear back from you on this one. And obviously, Eric will be a little bit involved mm-hmm. in this as well, as everybody is over here in the at Concept House. But don't let you let us fool you. We will still be doing the podcast. Yeah, we will not be stopping this just because we had a little bit of a downtime because we were quite busy. We will keep it up again, and Geneva will be very, very quick. We have a couple of really interesting special episodes lined up for you as well. And then Shanghai Motor Show is just around the corner. So it will be a very, very busy next few weeks, but we will be able to share a lot of information next time you see us.
So thanks again for tuning in, guys. Exciting news on a number of different fronts.
Exciting news indeed.
And I'm definitely looking forward to welcoming Mark to the team. And definitely looking forward to seeing you guys in Geneva. So if you're out there, you see us walking around, just grab us, give us a holler, contact us on various social media channels. You can reach Martin through LinkedIn. You can reach me through Instagram, Form Trends, all sorts of
concept. LinkedIn as well.
Yeah,
Facebook.
You can get Concept House as well through Instagram. So, by all means, get in touch with us somehow. Ping us a line and let us know that you'll be there. And we can have a drink or a coffee or, just say hello. Looking forward to it, guys. Thanks again for tuning in, and hasta luego.
Hasta luego. See you guys.